Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dog Pod, your original podcast covering the 12-0 only Pac-12 team to ever run the gauntlet, third ranked in the CFP. How about Pac-12 North back-to-back undefeated championship-bound Washington Huskies tackle football team? I'm with Law Doug Mitch on unpaid leave, fresh off our 24-21 win over Wazoo and the 115th and final Apple Cup as conference foes. We're going to dissect that game. We're going to get you prepped for the Pac-12 championship in Las Vegas. Law Doug, you buckled up, ready to go?
Buckled up, baby. Let's do it.
All right. Let's talk about that Apple Cup, buddy. Us versus us. Law Dog, give me the recap.
Yeah, us versus us. We barely won. We don't have to go too far into this one. There's a lot to talk about for this week. But suffice to say, this got off to a little bit of a slow start. Teams trading three and outs early. Cougars punting it back to UW. The Huskies get the score on their second drive of the game. Dylan Johnson punches it in, make it 7-0 Washington. Cougars come right back in five plays. Cam Ward to Josh Kelly ties it up at 7. But still no offense into the second quarter here. Then with 11 minutes left in the half, Grady Gross misses field goal that would have put the Huskies back on top. Ward can't capitalize, though. This time, instead of his receiver, he finds Thaddeus Dixon for the pick. Mm-hmm. Huskies punch it in three plays. Penix, long one to Rome, 40-yarder, make it 14-7. 1:05 left in the half, BT. The Huskies cannot move the ball. We thought maybe they'd punch it up and start pulling away here. They can't get anything going. They punt it back. The Cougars are able to move it 59 yards in seven plays in that final minute. Cam Ward to Kyle Williams this time, 14-14 at the half. Then on the second play of that second half, Penix intercepted by Jaden Hicks. But again, these offenses aren't doing much. So the teams trade punts. Cougars aren't making them pay here, and they miss a 50-yard field goal with just under 4 minutes left in the third.
I don't know why they kick that. We'll get into it. I don't know why they're kicking that field goal is beyond me. But
yeah, well, I mean, a long one too. And they made a couple of questionable calls. You think if you're going for it's fourth and season, every one of these plays, I thought they'd be a little bit more aggressive myself. Huskies are able to capitalize. This time they make it another touchdown from Penix to Rome, make it 21-14. Cougars finally able to sustain a drive, though. Midway through the fourth quarter, they burn a lot of clock. 13 plays, 65 yards, almost 6 minutes off the clock, capped off by Ward's third touchdown pass of the game. So it's 21-21, just under 6 minutes left. Huskies were just out of sync, though. They just did not good offensively in this game, and they go three and out here, kick the ball back to the Cougs with 4:46 left. The Cougs cross midfield, BT, and then they get the first of two absolutely crushing penalties. The holding call, I thought, on second and two, bumps them back to second and 12. The Huskies get the stop on third and 11, and then in another fourth down play here, Dickert's playing for overtime, and they decide to punt it back. Penix does enough this time. He tries to force a couple of throws down the field, and then Cougars get flagged for that questionable roughing the passer at the 48-yard line. That bumped the field goals Huskies into field goal range. Grady Gross finishes the job, gets his scholarship, earns it with a 42-yarder as time expires. Huskies win the Apple Cup 24-21.
They rushed, everybody rushed the field. It was one of those, it was interesting. I was sitting next to my 13-year-old. I said, hey, do you want to go down? If you want to go down, I'll go down. But my thought is, you're rushing the field because we're 12-0, not because of that Apple Cup win. Right.
Yeah. Well, and then they did an announcement a few minutes before that. Right. Like, make sure nobody rushes the field. I felt like nobody was even thinking about it until they're like,
I'm sitting down next to the student section and they were going down, they're heading down. They're bowling right on the top of us. This is 12-0. This is 12-0, and to have a team do this, it's just freaking incredible. Didn't make it easy on you. A couple shout outs. I want to say, 12-0. We didn't know if we'd see this again in our lifetime. We always talked about, at the beginning of the year, I was like, I can't pencil who we're going to lose to, but I can pencil that I think their team has a loss in it because it's just so freaking hard. Yeah. I penciled out why we would beat Oregon at home, why Oregon State was going to be a tough win on the road. And that USC, I thought, was going to give us challenges, but I thought we'd pull it together. But at the end, I'm like, God, did they really run the table? Does a team do this? And they did. They go 12-0 and find a way to get through and do what no one else has done. And it was freaking incredible. And we'll go through all the seniors next week. But to have those seniors come out with their family waiting for them. And, you know, many, obviously, there's, you know, the Michael Penix is the world and stuff. And then there's others that you just don't hear as much about who were true dogs through and through. That was just incredible. Glorious day all up. Cold, chilly, but beautiful. Clouds, no cloud in the sky. Just absolutely great sunshine. Shout out to the Don James Athletic Club tailgate was one of our best tailgates. And also, we did a fundraiser with Sergeant Husky. A big shout out to Mark Glenn. Many of you know, is Sergeant Husky, who's one of the biggest Husky supporters and supporter of local service members. And we did a fundraiser at our tailgate. We had Dubs come out, and the Dubs crew brought Dubs out for a photo booth that we set up. You could get a picture with Dubs, and raised just over $3,000 all told for local service members and veterans, particularly down in the Fort Lewis area, that you know need a little help this holiday season. And just freaking cool. I love that, where it's like, you know, tailgate for good, right? Take a chance to get people together, have a little fun and make some money for a good cause. We're there, but just an incredible day all up. One thing.
No rain this season, BT. And the last loss in Husky Stadium was to those Cougs when they planted the flag in 2021. You
know, thank you. Thank you for lighting the freaking fire, boys. Thank you. That is fine. I love it all day. You know, it was incredible. The Cougs, I will say this, just, I'll be changing my seats next year, 'cause I'm row one on the aisle, and I had this right to the entire fourth quarter was this group of Cougar 19-year-old, I don't know, co-eds screaming in my ear, you know, of, obscenities and how, you know, whatever. I was like, okay, here we go. This is fun. The Cougar Nation, one thing that cracks me up is like, they have this one, and God bless them. And look, I hope that you guys go out and do what you're going to do in the Mountain West and pull this thing together, because things look really freaking bleak for your program now. But I do really want that. I don't want Wazoo to go into the doldrums of the Mountain West and just go into irrelevance and become bankrupt. Like, be relevant, right? Be relevant, Wazoo. Pull it together. This is our other, you know, the other big, you know, the other big college of the state. But one of their things I think is the funniest thing is like their only comeback that I hear a lot of them go is they go, hey, you know what? All you Husky fans, like, none of you guys even went to UW. And to me, it's always the biggest self-own, which is like the other side of that argument is the only humanly possible way you would ever in your right mind root for this Wazoo football program is because you had to go to college there. Like to me, I'm like, I wish every single Seattle resident was a diehard Husky fan. I want the nation recruiting us. I don't give a rat's ass if they went to college there. It's such a self-own. It cracks me up.
BT, let me give a shout out to my favorite Coug. My grandfather, William
Yes,
played end for the Cougs in the 1940s after he returned from the Pacific fighting in World War II, played for the Cougs. Then he had three children out of Tacoma, one of whom was my mother, and they all went to UW, and he traveled with us wearing purple and gold to the Rose Bowl in 1991-92. So, I guess I'm trying to have it both ways here, but my favorite Coug, but also, you know, a prime example of a guy who, you know, the family were all Huskies, and he became a Husky as a result. And there's a lot of stories like that. And I think it is kind of a dumb, you know, moniker that the Cougs have about
it. Stud. You think your grandpa cared whether people went to college, whether they rooted for that team? No. Like, he knew. That is freaking awesome. Yeah. And that's it too. Is like, I love it. Pick your team, you know, and if you grow, a lot of guys go up in Spokane and become Coug fans. Awesome. Love it. Rock and roll. Go for it, man. That is great. That's awesome, Law Dog. And, you know, I think that's what makes this rivalry kind of cool is that sort of split nation mentality. And like, you know, you looked around our tailgate and it was probably, I don't know, maybe it was 20% Coug fans, and no one's, you know, everything is just lighthearted and fun. Having a good time with them. It was great. Loved it. Let me get into the game a little bit, though, because I think this is one of those ones where I hate to say, leaving, I was had a little bit of a, like, talking to some of the fans, like, hey, Eeyore, like, pick your chin up, bro. We're 12-0. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, this thing didn't turn out the way you wanted to. My blood pressure went a little bit higher. And there's some stuff to dissect, but this team is freaking 12-0. And how many of these games? I can point to a lot of games in our history and every other team's history. Freaking look at Oregon versus Oregon State last year. They lose that game. Mm-hmm. They don't pull it out. They lose it, but UW find a way to win this. Let me talk about the defense a little bit and what I thought they did. One thing, I thought five sacks, most on the season. Amazing. I want more of that. Incredible. One thing that was tough is we really struggled on that quick slant pass all day. And like, okay, was it a rub route? Like, I don't know. It's not getting called. It's not going to get called. But like, I really worry about maybe Oregon and some bull opponents seeing that tape and like Cam Ward, just that rub route was that little in route was like outside of the numbers coming to the hash was just seemed to be there all day. Just freaking there all day. Cam Ward, he goes for 317. Right? 317 a touchdown. Some communication is just, you talked about that Kyle Williams touchdown, that 37 yarder. There wasn't a soul in sight.
Right.
No one was there. Wasn't, he didn't make a play. No one was next to him. It was wide open. That worries me. I'll tell you about this though. The linebackers had a freaking day, man. Alfonso Tupatala, he's back to 100%, a sack and a TFL. Eddie, man, he had a sack. Carson, 14 tackles, six stops. He led the group in snaps. Everybody heard, get Carson on the field. Mm-hmm. Your top graded player on defense in all of PFF, Carson Beter. I mean, come on, dude. Amazing. How about Edge? I mean, Sakai, S-O-F-O-A. I wasn't talking about a pre-snap, a preseason at all. He stepped up, man. Huge sacks. How about the defensive backs? Thad Dixon, you talked about him. He got his first pick. Misha and Dom, they played all 81 snaps. MJ Ollie, he only played six run snaps, but he made three stops on those. Whoa. So MJ Ollie, they held him back a little bit, right? They held him back, but he absolutely made his presence known. He was there. Lance Holdclaw, one snap, one sack. How about Showtime, man? Thule played five snaps, so they held him back, right? And he was a beast when we need him. Now, I'm so excited, man. He's rested.
Played great against Oregon State, and he's going to be huge this weekend. So
huge. Got to need him the whole time. Cam Fad played 12 snaps. MJ Ollie, 14. And he had three stops. We needed all of those. We talked about it. Like, that's, you know, when I think about that defense, again, I worry a little bit that slant was there all day. Linebackers were freaking incredible. And we showed that, look, we held back a little bit. And boy, if things didn't turn out the way you wanted to, maybe we'd be kicking ourselves a little bit for the guys that we held back. But boy, just showed me what they wanted to do. What'd you think about that offense?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a little sluggish, right? I mean, you just saw Penix kind of, especially at the end of the game. I'll start at the end and move backwards. He was really forcing the ball down the field, and you could tell the Cougs were, you know, expecting it. They were right there. I mean, he almost threw a couple picks that might have turned the game. So to me, that was a kind of a risky, you know, outcome at the end. And then, of course, he had his head under the hood. Everybody who was watching on TV saw, you know, he's kind of ushered off the field. So you just have to wonder, like, what is going on out there? Because he definitely has not been totally himself. That said, you know, they did enough when it counted and got the ball, you know, down the field and scored, particularly in that fourth quarter when we needed to kind of get off the schneid, break the tie. And they finally got it moving. So I think, you know, I look back at the last 4 or 5 weeks. It's definitely been a step back from where you were, you know, early in the season. But I don't think you can sit there and say, you know, that Washington is, you know, not capable of of doing what they need to do here. I mean, I think Penix, the accuracy issues is the more concerning part. Dylan Johnson, I thought, bounced back, had a nice game.
Sure did.
82 yards on 21 carries, and he's averaging over 5 yards a carry on the season. Rome, obviously, with that huge fourth down and one, I didn't mention in the recap, but I mean, that was just an enormous play.
Fooled everyone in the stands. All of us were screaming no because I thought Dylan Johnson got wrapped up, and there's bolting down the side.
I sit at a higher vantage point than you, and I thought it was too. Penix did a great job of selling it. And then, of course, Rome, you know, seven catches, 120 yards to go with those 23 yards rushing, two touchdowns, one of the three Biletnikoff finalists. So he, you know, I think continues to have a monster season. He's making his case that he's better than Reggie Williams, man. I never thought I'd say the words. But it was great, obviously, to see McMillan. They really tried to kind of get him the ball in comfortable situations just to get him going. And I think probably just give him some confidence going into this week because he has been a huge part of these two wins over Oregon the last, you know, 14 months. And without him, you know, it's just not going to be the same on Friday. So I think that they were really trying to, you know, get him comfortable and get him some confidence back. And then, of course, Westover with two amazing, you know, catches. The guy just is so clutch. He's been money all season. He's just like a forever Husky. You know, he's just the guy who's never paid for a drink around town the rest of his life.
I mean, what tight end the grabs that he's making, and some of those are like, as you talked about, some of the Penix, those are a little bit off. And he's going back across his body on the other side. And we're like, dude, what other tight end is making that grab? It's just, I mean, just clutch, Westy.
No, I, so overall, I mean, look, I'd be lying if I said that this offense is not clicking on all cylinders the way it was in week seven. You know, we played the Ducks. So, but I mean, I think there's a lot of, you get everybody's best shot when you're 11-0, 12-0. And, you know, everyone's been dissecting the tape, trying to do whatever they can to disrupt Penix. And so, you know, Oregon's going to give it another shot. But honestly, you know, it may take five or six scoring drives in this game. And I think that this team is capable. I think they have it in them.
Man, I think you're right. What do you think about the comment that Grubb made about, I think the Wazoo had some of the signs, and that's fair, but I think they had some of them.
Yeah, I mean, he said it pretty definitively, right? Not, I think. It's like, we figured it out, and they had him. But then they come out in the second half and don't do much about it either. So, right. I don't know if they were trying to shield their signs or, I don't know. I mean, then maybe you can't change them at halftime of a game. So maybe they had to just kind of do some different things. Clearly, though, you know, they did not have it together offensively. So that could explain it. And, you know, I also found it funny, Grubb, you know, this has been a big topic in college football, obviously, this season, right? Grubb's like, I had no hard feelings, you know, do what you got to do. But he's like, but we'll be making some changes. The timing is fortuitous on that. I'm glad that we're starting with new signals for Friday's game, because that's, you know, we're it's going to help.
The only other thing I'll say, like, JP's gone 8 quarters without a catch. He dropped a first down. Like, you know, he's had a little stretch. We need him. He's got to come back to old JP form and be that number two guy that he has been through most of the year in this final game.
Yeah, I mean, he stepped up so much with McMillan.
Oh, God.
And I mean,
there was days when he was the guy. He was the guy.
And now, right? For the last few weeks, there's kind of barely been any either one of them. And it really shows. I think it's possible you'll see some more Jeremy Bernard. You'll see some more Denzel Boston than maybe you thought you would. And
who was the hero in the last game? Giles.
Taj Davis was the hero last year, you know.
Oh, last year. So last year, but this year it was Giles.
Yeah.
Giles was the guy, and he's back. He's back this week, right? I mean, now that he doesn't have to worry about his redshirt year. The one interesting stat, though, Dogs were 6-7 in their first 6 games in situations where they could take a 2-score lead. We're 8-24.
Yeah.
We aren't putting teams away. And I don't know if this game this week is going to be a put a team away. But you do have to have that killer mentality, and when pressure's on, put that team away by a couple of scores like we did in the first couple of games, or whatever that translates to coming in. But hey, look, I mean, 12-0, I just was like, you just got to relish this. You know, my son and I, we made a senior poster, for Mason Wheeler and for the rest of the seniors. Mason, you know, he's been, volunteer coach for my son's team, wide receiver, just a great kid, and made it for them. And on the back of it, we're like, let's do another little sign. We made this 12-0 sign and kind of hit it away. We're like, maybe we'll use this. And at the end, posted that up, and it's been the one that's kind of, you know, got a lot of views, because it is one of those things where, like, just, you gotta soak this moment in, man. You just don't know.
It doesn't happen very often. I mean, the problem, though, is, you know, in the old days, this would be a done deal. We'd be going to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah,
Michigan,
the Rose Bowl.
And we'd be playing Michigan, and then it's probably Georgia and Florida State in a Sugar Bowl, and one of them's number one in one poll, one of them's number one in the other poll, right? I mean, that's probably how it worked in the old days. And so this year, these conference championship games, you know, it's like our curve is a lot steeper. We got to beat the toughest team on our schedule twice, and you know, it's a rough kind of outcome here after you go 12-0 and you should be celebrating. And it's like, I'm not going to totally be relaxed until we got 13-0 BT.
No, it's not. This is the, I'm not relaxed at all. I mean, this is like the, you know, you're playing horse and you invent the prove it at the end, right?
Yeah,
like, dude,
yeah.
I got all freaking 5 letters. Like, what more do you want here, buddy? No, you got to hit that 3 again. Yep. It's just, it's nuts. But hey, those are the rules. We got to live by them, right? So we're on to the next game. But one thing I want to do, normally we save our Pac-12 roundup for the end of the episode, but this is the last one. I cannot freaking believe this, man. I don't know about you, but I had a little nostalgia at the end of the night where you're kind of watching that Cal-UCLA game with a little more fever than you would before, because you're just like, this is it, man. I can't believe this is
freaking it. And they played the obituary video.
Oh, it's just so crazy, man. This is it. And so here you go, like our obit, the Pac-12 roundup for the last time. Let's kind of go through this thing. Hey, so Civil War, 5:30 on Fox on Friday night. This number 16, 8-3 Ducks at number 6, 10-1 Oregon. Beavs hadn't won in Eugene since 2007. We talked about this. The Ducks were a 13.5-point favorite. Beavs, to me, they look like they were about to get back into the game. Closed it to one score, 7-14 with 2 minutes left. But then they allowed Oregon to absolutely march down the field in 90 seconds and brought that score to 21-7. And then I was like heading into locker room, it's over at that point. That was your moment, man. If you
that's
you
needed the score to stop that there. They got that we didn't.
Yeah, that's it. Like that's the score where you just could not put them away. Ducks would win and cover 31-7. We'd later find out that Jonathan Smith knew he was heading to Michigan State at this point and had been working on a deal for a number of points. This is so crazy. No deal has been struck for the next time they will play. They're trying to pull it together, but right now there's no Civil War for next year. Oregon finishes number 5 at 11-1. Beavers finish 8-4, number 20, the highest rated four-loss team. They were in the mix up until the last 2 weeks, but I worry significantly about the future of this program as they transition to the Mountain West, go deeper into debt, look for a new head coach, and have no end in sight and way to get out from an NIL and other perspectives that make them grow. I worry about the future of this Oregon State team outside of being like a potential Mountain West champion in a mid. The future of this program worries me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to pile on them too much, but I looked at the all-time winning percentage among Power 5 schools. Oregon State is the 6th worst in the country. Indiana, Northwestern, Iowa State, Kansas State, and then Oregon State. So, I mean, in terms of football tradition, I know they've definitely committed to football. They've remodeled their stadium twice. I mean, they've got diehard fans. There's no question. But over the years, this team has been a kind of a battering ram in the Pac 8, 10, 12. And, I just think it's going to be tough, I think. And that's why you saw them hire Bray, their defensive coordinator. I think that was kind of maybe the right move for them at this point, because I don't know that they're getting a big time coach to come down there until they get some more, certainty about where they're going
to
be.
Right. And at this point, you're protecting continuity and trying to ensure that the cupboards don't just open, for the transfer portal. And maybe that's the right move. Wild. Okay, here we go. Saturday at noon on Pac-12, it was 4-7 CU, Colorado Buffs at 7-4 Utah and Salt Lake City. The Utes were the 21.5-point favorite. Utes would win, but boy, they didn't cover. 23-7. It was 17. It was not easy. Enter in, I'm not even sure what string quarterback. Luke Petari. I don't know. Is he third, fourth? I have no idea. But he would throw for 61 total yards for Utah. Ran for a pair of short yardage TDs. Pair that with a trifecta of Cole Becker field goals. Man, Utah just always has freaking kickers every time. No Shedeur Sanders. Ryan Staub filled it in. But Travis Hunter, he did his thing, man. 107 yards and a TD and playing on both sides of the ball. Just not enough. CU finishes 4-8. They do cover the 3.5 over under on the season. But remember, we're ranked in the top 15 at one point, the darling of college football. Utah misses its first Pac-12 championship in 3 years. Unranked for the first time in, I don't even know how many years it's been since the last time they finished the season unranked. It's time for Utes, in my opinion, go wreck shop in the Big 12. It's all ahead of you. But what a tough year for Utah from an injury perspective. And all part of that says, yeah, oh my gosh, Tarmy's also like, cry me a freaking river. You finished 8-4, man. It wasn't that bad. But it was a very tough year from, I think, what could have been for Utah football.
Well, and the way they handled Cam Rising, they were kind of willy or won't he for the first month. Then he publicly came out and was like, no, I'm not coming back. The coaches kind of made it seem like it was him who was making the decision when maybe, he didn't have medical clearance. Who knows what was going on there? But I think they wanted to keep everybody guessing. In the end, this team kind of just, when they had a solid quarterback situation, and Rising was that last year, they were able to make it to 2 Rose Bowls. But they just, when they have not had that, they have really struggled to put up points over the years, even though they've been solid. And, they definitely end the Pac-12 as one of the you know, the best programs in the conference right now. I'd take them over UCLA.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's not even a question. Yeah. I mean, they're like, absolutely. And I think the future is bright for them in the Big 12. I think they're going to flourish. How about this? The 97th Territorial Cup, man. Number 15, 8-3, Arizona, 3-8 ASU in Tempe. Zona was an 11-point favorite. I think we talked about this line. Like, how is this line 11? It should be so much higher. And Zona with the 59-23 win over ASU and an absolute beatdown covering that line. Fifita threw for a school record, 527 yards. I'm so glad we played these guys when we did. My Pac-12 fantasy running back, Mike Wiley. Pac-12, I will say this, another thing we talked about. We've had a Pac-12 fantasy league for, I'm going to go ahead and say longer than anyone because I think there's probably only two or three Pac-12 fantasy leagues in all of America. But we've had this thing for 9 years, and I started out as champ. I've had a few in between, and I was glad to go out as a champ this week with Mike Penix and a few of these players taking me to victory. But Mike Wiley, he was a big one for me. He had a huge game on the ground. 3 years ago, Zona lost 70-7. They won three games that year. Kevin Sumlin was fired. Look at him now.
Yeah.
9-3, number 15 in the CFP, the second highest ranked three-loss team behind Louisiana State University and ahead of Notre Dame, ahead of Oklahoma State, who's playing for the Big 12. Two programs going in completely different directions as they head into the Big 12. Bear down, big win for Arizona.
Yeah, and as it would have been sacrilegious to say a coach that goes 12-0 in the Pac-12 is not going to be the coach of the year. I can't even remember a time where that's happened. That's right. That's but right. I mean, here you got Jed Fish and a lot of the media are saying he's going to be the coach of the year. Fair. I mean, whatever. certainly has done a lot to deserve it. DeBoer had to split it with Jonathan Smith last year. It'd be nice to see him win it, but you can't take away from what Jed Fish has done. The program was as bad a Power Five program as there was in 2020.
I mean, that turnaround is absolutely incredible, and I think they just absolutely caught fire. I'd love to see them play, you know, Mississippi State again now with what they're doing. I mean, they're just looking good. How about number 19, 8-3, Notre Dame at 3-8, Stanford, Irish, the 26-point favorite. Irish would cover this massive line, 66-23. At our ECS team, it runs all over the Cardinal, 238 yards and 4 TDs. Stanford finishes with 3-9, and hear me out. Stanford is about to be the Vanderbilt of the ASCC. This is my prediction. I hate to say this. I think they're done.
Wow.
I think you're going to look back at the Harbaugh years and they won't get back to this again. I think the things that are against them now, transfer portal, NIL, a lack of interest whatsoever in upper campus in football excellence.
Not a lot of fan support.
Not a lot of fan support, I think, is going to put them into.
And they're taking, what, a third share of the television money for the next few years? I mean, that's going to put them even further behind.
I think they're done. And I think this is one of those, like, when I think about, you know, why this is, hear me out of why I think they're the, this is like the Vanderbilt of the ACC, is I think they're going to be this team that is the academic darling of the conference, right? And at another level of Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt is, you know, that is the absolutely darling of the conference from an academic perspective. But they will every 4 or 5 years have be bowl eligible, and every now and then they'll upset a team, and they're going to go on Vanderbilt-esque 20-year runs where they, you know, where teams go 20-0 against them. And I hate to say that's why I think the direction of Stanford football is going in the modern era, whether it's right and wrong. I hope they enjoyed their time that they had during Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw, where they were absolutely wrecking shop in the Pac-12.
If they hadn't hired Harbaugh, it may have never happened, right? I mean, I don't know that Shaw was the program builder. He definitely inherited, you know, a team that was coming off coming off an Orange Bowl, and then he took him to what, four conference titles or division titles. I mean, so certainly certainly those two guys, without that kind of run that they went on, you really do have to go back to like the 20s to find where Stanford. I mean, they had the Jim Plunkett years in the 70s, but you're right. I mean, a program like that gets down, it's very, very difficult to come back.
I just think everything that that takes to be great in this current area is stacked up against them. And what they did, I actually look back on it now of what they did during that era of Harbaugh and David Shaw, and it impresses me even more that they were able to do what they did during that time. But I think it's over going to the ACC. How about this one? 5-6 Cal at 7-4 UCLA. Bruins, 8.5-point favorite. Wrong team favorite. Ethan Garbers goes down the UW transfer. He goes down. Cal gets bowl eligible for the first time in 3 years with a 33-7 win. And will the Chip Kelly get fired train just keep going? That conversation just will not end. But wow.
I mean, he got an extension after last season. So it was kind of crazy that it started, that they were talking about firing him. But then you look and go, who have they beaten? And a couple of the guys that UCLA guys that I follow on Twitter were saying, you know, that he's done this against the worst schedules UCLA has ever played. And they're, you know, they're barely, they have not won a conference title since 1998. There's just no excuse for that. There's no excuse for that. This is a team that was one of the, maybe the best program in the Pac-10 in the 1980s. It really might have been.
And you've got everything. You have an academic degree that everyone seeks out, but you don't have the restrictions that a Stanford does. You have LA.
Yeah, you should.
You've got the Rose Bowl. Like come
crazy.
On,
guys. Yeah, but since Terry Donahue left, they just have not been able to sustain anything, and it's frustrating because, you know, they've jumped up and beaten us like they did last year, and it frustrates me to no end because, I mean, we've been the better program by any measure over the last, you know, I'm going to say 30 years.
But they just come up and it's so crazy. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what these guys do, you know, jumping into, you know, like us into the Big Ten and moving forward. You know, and they were, I saw that's like the competing flyover banners that they had. I don't know if you saw this, of like two airplanes, one that was like fire Chip Kelly, and the next one that was like some USC alums paid for a banner that said, like, we love Chip Kelly, retain Chip Kelly, which is just, I mean, that's just salty and great stuff. I love it. I mean, I still can't believe, again, it was just such an end of the day, you know, come home from this exhausting day, frankly. You know, we were at the tailgate at 9 o'clock setting up for the fundraiser. You know, I get home 6, 7 o'clock. The tailgate apparently went until like 9 p.m. or later. I'm exhausted. But watching that last game and just watching the end of Cal, it didn't hit me until then. I was like, I can't believe this is it, man. I just cannot believe this is it. And soak it up and enjoy it, you know. And boy, what a year that, like, the last year, this is our 12-0 year. And one more week to go, and let's get into that. Before we talk about the outlook, so this week, Friday's coming up. We're going to be in Las Vegas. I mean, this is it. You talked about the last time we played Oregon in the regular season. Game day was here. Biggest game, biggest regular season game, you know, of who knows how long. And here you go. You've got two top five teams playing together in the Pac-12 championship. We are the only team that has to play against a Power 5 champion that we've already beaten once this year. They say, hey, prove it. Do it again. This is the only top 5 matchup. This is everything. It's coming up. But before we get into this matchup, how about a trip into the hot tub time machine? Let's go back in time.
One more trip into the Wayback Machine. I'm going to promise one more before the season's over. I'll get to that. But we've been diving the history of the Pac-12. This week, the final conference game on Friday night, we are going to relive... That's right, the glory of Washington, BT. I put some nuggets together for the old leather lungs for this titanic matchup with the Ducks. So there are plenty of similarities between the early days of football on the West Coast and today. The East Coast media was kind of quick to dismiss if they even discussed football out here, particularly in the Pacific Northwest. But before even there was a PCC, BT, there was a Northwest Intercollegiate Athletic Association. And it was dominated by the University of Washington tackle football team. Familiar foes like Oregon, Oregon State, Washington State, and some less familiar foes like Idaho, Montana, Montana State, Whitman.
Oh, yeah,
those were the 8 teams in the Northwest Conference. It wasn't really a conference even as we know the term today. I mean, the Big Ten had been created, but they were not playing like a uniform schedule, or they didn't even really have bylaws. They didn't even get organized for football until 1908. But that was the same year that Washington hired the original law dog, Gloomy Gil Dobie, the Dane. The Dour Dane. Dobie was just 30 years old with a couple of years of coaching under his belt at North Dakota State after he completed his law degree. And he began a streak that is unmatched even today, never losing a game in 9 seasons, winning the Northwest Conference all 4 seasons Washington was a member, finishing his Husky career with 58 wins, 3 ties, and not a single defeat, 42 shutouts, culminating with their first Pacific Coast Conference title when the conference was created in 1916. But there's incredible symmetry in this history, BT. 1916, the first year of the PCC, the Huskies win 3 games, no losses, but a crucial tie with Oregon. resulted in sending the Webfoots to the Rose Bowl, where they beat Brown for their only Rose Bowl win of the 20th century. Doby never got to the Rose Bowl. Here we are 107 years later, and the Huskies or Ducks are squaring off again to determine the conference champion's final year.
Let's do it for Doby.
Let's do it for Gil, the Dour Dane. Although Doby relied heavily on the running game, he was among the first coaches to kind of embrace the forward pass, which had been created in 1905. Mm-hmm. And this was the advantage he used to exploit over his opponents. And he became the fastest coach to win 100 games of college football in just 108 games or 114 games. That was the record that stood until 2014, when Lance Leopold would break it in 108 games. Doby would go on to – so that was a 100-year he held that record. Doby would go on to coach at Navy. He only lost three games in three seasons. Then he settled in at Cornell, where he won three national titles in a row from 1921 to 1923, overlapping with our Cal Bears a little bit there. He was inducted in the Football Hall of Fame in 1951. Incredible story, Gil Doby. All right. The Huskies would bring in three different head coaches in the next four seasons trying to
– Can I just pause real quick, Law Dog?
Yeah.
What do you think happens if Christopher Lloyd shows up in a DeLorean, picks up Gil Doby, and drops him off at Allegiant Stadium Friday at like 5 o'clock? his mind just explodes.
I don't think he took his tie off even in a sleep ET. So I think he would be a little bit out of sorts, and he'd be shocked that teams throw the ball more than five times a game. But I'll take my chances with DeBoer is what I'm saying. All right.
Keep going.
1919, Claude Hunt brings the Huskies on the verge of their first Rose Bowl appearance, but again, they lose to the Ducks this time, giving the Ducks their second trip to Tournament Park. They still haven't played in the Rose Bowl Stadium here. They lost to Harvard. Eventually, the Huskies settled on one of their former players, Enoch Bagshaw, to lead the program. And then, after finishing runner-up to Cal in 1923, the Golden Bears, we talked about this, stepped aside to allow another team to play in the Rose Bowl, and that team was Washington, who... get this, BT. On December 1st, 1923, 100 years to the day before this game on Friday, the Huskies beat the Ducks clinch a Rose Bowl spot in place of the Cal Bears. They played in their first Rose Bowl where they played Navy to a 14-14 tie. Cal and Cornell both claiming the national championship that year among probably a couple other teams. Cal, of course, settling in at their winter cottage in Lake Tahoe when that Rose Bowl game was played. All right. Bagshaw finally defeated Cal and win the Huskies' second conference title in 1925. He led the Huskies back to the Rose Bowl against Alabama, and this is the game that has been called the game that changed the South. The Rose Bowl was looking for an Eastern team to play Washington. Nobody wanted to go and disrupt their academics. Tulane said no. The Rose Bowl settled for Alabama as the replacement. It was their first appearance in a bowl game. Everyone assumed the Huskies would win easily against those Southerners. Crucially, the Huskies missed two extra points in the first half. They take a 12-0 lead into halftime. Then Alabama erupts for 20 points in the third quarter, including a long 50-yard touchdown pass, which is very rare for that time. The Huskies' late touchdown could only bring them within a point, and they're those two extra points away from winning their national title. The Crimson Tide claimed the first of their 18 national titles, and that game is considered the game that gave birth to football in the South. In all, Enoch Bagshaw did a great job in the 1920s, finished 63-22 with six ties, and his legacy of taking his alma mater to first two Rose Bowls, coming within 3 points of two national titles, should never be forgotten. All right. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here to talk about a really important legacy, Husky football, Jim Owens. Not without controversy during his time at UW, but it's indisputed. He took the program to new heights when he took over as head coach in 1957. In his third season, 1959, the slush fund scandal had broken up the conference. The Huskies playing in the AAWU that later became known as the Big Five, later became known as the Pac-8. I promise the listeners we will have an episode on the slush fund scandal, but I'm still working on it.
Two or 3 hours? How many hours do we need for that?
We'll try to keep it under 10 minutes. All right. Okay. So back to 1959. Rose Bowl is under no obligation to take the winner because the PCC was dissolved, but they invite Washington anyway. And for the first time since World War I, the Pac-8 conference really hanging in the balance here with no Rose Bowl contract. But Owens leads the Huskies to a 10-1 record, including wins over an 8-2 Oregon team that was playing as an independent, and a 20-0 shutout over the Cougars in the Apple Cup. Their only loss was to a top 15 USC team that season. We talked about those crucial Trojan games over the years a few weeks ago. This one, 1959, probably cost UW a national title. But despite the turmoil, the Huskies were nevertheless invited to the Rose Bowl. They won a three-way tie with USC and UCLA. They had beaten UCLA. UCLA had beaten the Trojans for the victory bell. The Huskies get the three-way tie on New Year's Day, 1960. Huskies crush Wisconsin 44-8 to win their first Rose Bowl. Woo. Bob Condotta, the Husky beat reporter emeritus, wrote in 2003, that the game was largely responsible for the rebirth of West Coast college football. Big Ten had been dominating the Rose Bowl since they signed their contract in 1947. They had won 11 of the 12 Rose Bowls. USC had snuck one in there, but Washington broke the Big Ten's 6-game win streak and then came right back the next year and started one of its own. 1960, Jimmy Owens' fourth year at the helm, Huskies get revenge over the Trojans, winning 34-0 in the Coliseum, BT. This was the most points ever scored by UW in the Coliseum until this season. Huskies run through the conference undefeated to make it back to the Rose Bowl. They defeat number one team in the AP poll, Minnesota. As we all know, they claim the national title in 1960, later on, 2006. Their one loss that season, 15-14 in Husky Stadium to Navy, who finished number four.
Come on, Navy, really?
They were number four in the poll. They were 9-2, and they had the Heisman Trophy winner, Joe Bellino, at running back. So this was not a bad loss.
Okay.
But the Huskies' back-to-back Rose Bowl wins in 1959-1960 represented only the second time that had ever been done, following only the 1932 and 33 USC Trojans. And to this day, only five schools have won back-to-back Rose Bowls. Washington and USC, the only schools that have done it more than once, BT. All right. I wanted to take a moment. We keep coming back to these claimed national titles, right?
Okay.
There was just not really a clear way to determine who it was in the early days of college football. You didn't have intersectional games and rivalries and whatnot. So during the early part of the poll era, from 1936 to 1965, the polls came out after the regular season. They did not take bowl games into account. So in 1960, UW finishes fifth and sixth in the major polls, but Minnesota is ranked number one in both polls. The Huskies beat them in the Rose Bowl. Ole Miss, which was ranked number two, defeated Rice. Yes, Rice in the Sugar Bowl. The Rebels claim their one and only national title in 1960 as well as Minnesota and as well now as the Huskies. This is the only national champion. The only national champion I'm aware of that beat Rice. All right. No further polls were released after November 1960. Minnesota claims it. The Helms Athletic Foundation named Washington national champions following the bowl games, and the school eventually claims it years later. Very common for this era, and I think the Huskies should consider doing the same thing for the 1984 team. We're going to get to that in 1 second. I promise we'll get through this, BT.
Okay.
The Big Ten's dominance, the Rose Bowl following World War II, probably held down the Huskies of 1959-1960. They should have been stronger, you know, considered national champions. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So back to Owens. He becomes athletic director in 1960, but his tenure was not without controversy. He goes to one more Rose Bowl in 1964, but the next decade is not kind to Washington football. They're floundering on the field. And then in 1969, he loses his job as athletic director around the same time that several black players accused Owens of racist practices, even refusing to board the team plane for the game against UCLA. He suspended the players. The controversy was playing out in the public eye, and the Huskies were piling up losses. Eventually, he lifts the suspensions. The team comes back together for their only win that season, BT, 1969. My parents' junior year at UW, they win the Apple Cup. That was their only win.
That was it.
The Jim Owens statue unveiled at Husky Stadium in 2003. And when it was, Jim Owens kind of apologized for what had gone on back then. It seems like it was kind of forgive and forgot, maybe, but still part of the history.
Yep, all right. That's right.
The Huskies rebound a little bit with Sonny Sixkiller in the early 70s, but honestly, Owens never made it back into the top two of the conference. And with his contract expiring after the 1974 season, he decides they mutually part ways. And Don James comes in to fill the shoes of the giant, Jim Owens. And boy, did he ever for the next 18 seasons. We know what happened next. 18 seasons, James won the conference six times and amazingly finished second eight other times.
So crazy.
One of those was 1984, a loss to USC in the Coliseum in November after the Huskies had been ranked number one for four consecutive weeks. That one also probably cost UW a national title. Instead of the Rose Bowl, Huskies were invited to the Orange Bowl. They defeated Oklahoma, the Sooner Schooner. Barry Switzer announced after the Huskies. Barry Switzer said, I will be voting for the Huskies in the coaches poll. But the Huskies finished runners up in the AP poll. It was the closest vote in the history of the AP poll. A very weird season in college football. That was a real missed opportunity, man. We should have had another national title then. All right. After a disappointing 1988 season, James elevates Husky Honk Dick Baird to the recruiting coordinator and devoted the program to finding more speed. And in 1991, coming off a Rose Bowl victory over Iowa, but with unfinished business, he brings in Keith Gilbertson, himself, who was a head coach at Idaho, to be offensive coordinator, to introduce the spread offense. Those two changes gave the Huskies the boost they needed. They finished 12-0, won the coaches' poll. That was the first national title that's been officially recognized by the NCAA. So obviously we all know that story. Then riding a 22-game win streak in early November 92, hometown paper, Seattle Times, breaks the story that Billy Joe Hobert had taken out a loan, which today, by today's standards, this is so quaint, right? Takes it a loan for $50,000 for a T-Bird and some guns, and he was suspended. The team was distracted. They limped to a finish in 92, losing Don James's final game as head coach in the 1993 Rose Bowl later that summer with the Pac-10 imposing penalties on the Huskies. Okay, think about what the Big Ten just did to Jim Harbaugh. But the Pac-10 was literally imposing scholarship penalties on the Huskies, and Don James resigns in protest. And just before the season, Jim Lambright takes over. And frankly, in 1996, they come back and win a share of the conference title. It's incredible with those sanctions hanging around the program.
Yeah, totally.
But they never really get back to their peak until 20 years later. So I just wanted to talk about this in terms of the legacy that Owens and James left on this program. In the 45 seasons between the Owens years, the 18 years of the Don James years, the 18 years of the Owens years, and then all the way to 2003, right? The Huskies had just five losing seasons in those 45 years, BT. And they were all between 1968 and 1976.
Yep.
They won 11 conference titles in those 45 seasons. They went 7-3 in the Rose Bowl with an Orange Bowl in there too. And this, I think, is really important. They won 72% of their games against what we would call the Pac-12 North rivals: Wazoo, Oregon, Oregon State, Cal, and Stanford. 152 out of 211 games. And I mean, there was one point when they'd beaten Cal 19 years in a row. They had beaten Oregon State 19 out of 20 years. They had beaten Oregon 17 out of 20 years. So that's the Husky football that you and I grew up with, right?
Yeah.
Dominant, particularly against the Northwest rivals and what became the Pac-12 North. So when you talk about the legacy, that is what Jim Owens and particularly Don James created, that legacy of Husky football. And BT, that is why they have statues outside Husky Stadium. Woo. And once more into the breach, dear friend, this Friday night, the last game in Pacific Coast Conference history, the Huskies have a chance to add this team to the annals of history. Bless these boys.
Go bless these
dogs.
Go dogs. I freaking love it, man. I mean, look at all that history and just a way to bring this thing to present day with everything in front of you where, you know, a 30 years from now and some, you know, avatar format of podcasting, whatever exists, somebody's talking about the Kalen DeBoer era and what he did with a 12-0 team and brought this thing together and the opportunity that's in front of you. Just freaking incredible. I love it. Look, Friday, 5 p.m., we got to talk about it on Fox, live from Allegiant Stadium.
ABC.
Okay, ABC. It's the 13th and final Pac-12 championship. UW is seeking, as you mentioned, its 18th conference championship. Third as a member of the Pac-12, Oregon seeking its 12th conference championship. Its fifth as a member of the Pac-12. Let's get into this game. Okay. First of all, the Oregon offense, we'll talk about it. They're going to score. How much are they going to score? Up to our defense. The Oregon offense under Will Stein is all about, they run the ball physically, shifty running backs, they get playmakers in open space. outside the numbers, underneath whatever, and let them make plays with their feet. They take multiple shots down the field for the game. They use spread principles, RPOs, play action. It's all effective. They love this kind of play. They're second in total offense in the country, 540 yards a game. 6 yards to pay, 7.6 yards to play. First in passing offense. Let's give these guys their respect. Like, I get it. Bo Nix can run when needed. 159 yards of total running and 6 rushing touchdowns. He can when he has to, right? The O-line, in my opinion, not the greatest O-line that Oregon's ever had. They're very penalty prone, but they protect pretty well. Our old friend Josh Carnelly, he struggled, in my opinion, especially on run block. But he plays the whole game at left tackle. The other tackle, Majani Cornelius, is stronger. Steven Jones, potentially their best pass blocker at right guard. They rotate left guards between Marcus Hopper and Iapani Lolulu. Their center, locked in, Jackson Powers Johnson. He's a little penalty prone at center, likes to get off a little early, but he's fine on pass block, and when he's moving backwards, like what he can do. Wide receivers are solid. Troy Franklin, we know he's a weapon. 1,349 yards and 14 TDs. Tez Johnson right behind him at 940 yards, not far behind that. And they use the USC transfer Gary Bryant Jr. as needed. So I get it. I get it. The biggest concern, I think, is the run game. Bucky Irving, 1,000 yards already. 6.4 yards a carry and 10 touchdowns. I still think he can't pass block for shit. If I watch his play, I don't understand. But my God, he is freaking shifty. He is so shifty, and he's so hard to tackle. Jordan James, he'd start in most Pac-12 teams, and that's their second running back. 660 yards, 10 touchdowns, 7.1 yards a clip. We're going to need every rep from Tui Cam MJ Ollie, who we limited last week. Jabbar Muhammad, Dom Hampton, and Mish, a healthy Cam Fab, a bit of Thad Dixon, and Mikel are going to have to show that they're DBU worthy of that moniker. Those defensive backs are going to have to make some big plays, and most important, boy, when Troy Franklin, he makes a pass, boy, you got to actually tackle him and Tez in particular before they get that yak. Defensive line for Tui Tui Tele, hopefully Tule got to know the whole game. Just a little bit of Jacob Andis as needed. That's what we need to stop that. Put pressure up the middle. The edges, no more penalties. I get you want to get off early. Watch that snap. Don't get those penalties. DTF and Braylon, a little splash of sky. Braylon Trice is right. The last couple games has been everything we thought he was going to be. A little bit more of that. Get that pressure. Seal the edges on the runs. When Bucky gets through, and he will, like he's going to get through that line. Carson, Tupatala, Eddie, short game. Limit those short gains and spy Bo Nix on those stupid short runs when things break down. Bo Nix is not a design, like off tackle. Here I go. I'm going for it. But when things break down, boy, scramble. He's tough. He's a scrambler, and he's
scramble
tough.
Scramble drill is going to be brutal.
And freaking get there. That's what I want to see. That's the formula for doing this thing again on the defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think offensively, I think kind of I expressed some concerns. I mean, you know, earlier this season, right, Penix goes for 302 yards, 4 touchdowns. Dylan Johnson went for 100 yards on 20 carries and a touchdown. Rome had a monster game, 8 catches, 128 yards, but Jalen Polk also tacked on 118 yards and a touchdown, and then Giles Jackson had the big game like you're talking about. Yep. So I think, you know, the matchup that we needed to win these last two games against the Ducks was through the air, the aerial attack, because their DBs just aren't, you know, as good as, frankly, what our receivers can do. So, I think that being able to throw the ball down the field, move the ball down the field, answer when the Ducks score. Because you're right, they're going to put up some points. But this team all season has answered the call. And they get into a spot where they absolutely need to score or they need to flex some muscle. They've been able to get it done. And so I think you just have to summon those good feelings one more time, right? One more time. Let's get the ball down the field. And I also think, you know, this Duck defense is not all it's cracked up to be. They've certainly played well since the Washington game, and they've been kind of lighting up opponents, but they really haven't played anyone particularly good. I mean, even Oregon State, you know, Husky defense held them to 20. And, you know, here they go with their head coach telling them before the game, he's not coming back next year. So it's not a surprise that Oregon State kind of lays an egg in the rivalry game a little bit there. I'm sure they wanted to win, but it's just, you know, that kind of distraction stuff is just not what a team like needs in a situation like that. So, you know, I actually think the matchup, it favors us in the offensive side of the ball. We have been able to outscore them the last two games. The reason we've been able to have those opportunities is because the defense has gotten off the field in key moments. And you're going to need some of that on Friday. You're just not going to win this game if you can't get off the field. And frankly, if Dan Lanning lines up for a field goal to take some points in the first half, that's going to concern me, because that to me tells that he's playing a little bit more of a long game with this one. And I mean, the Ducks, they're on a mission. They're absolutely on a mission. They have no margin for error, right? And they haven't given any. And they need to win this game, and potentially with style points, to impress the committee enough to put them in the playoff. It's absolutely not a lock that they will make the playoff. You know, I could see Texas potentially jumping them. Mm-hmm. I could see either SEC team getting in ahead of them. And I think Texas is probably a little bit more of an outside chance, but I don't think it's any lock that they get into the four. So they're definitely playing for everything here. But, you know, the Huskies have won this game the last two times they played. I don't get the 9.5-point spread. I just do not get it.
It doesn't make sense to me.
How is this going to be a blowout? And John Canzano on his podcast gets out there and is like, oh, I think Ducks are going to win big. It's like, in what world? In what world do you think they're going to blow out the Huskies? Like, that is insane.
Yeah. Look, Canzano's our version of Softy. Be a homer. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. I'm okay with it. The one thing that's interesting is, like, the line hasn't moved. And I get it. Like, if you've been watching tape for the last 5 weeks and you see the way Oregon has been putting away teams and you see the way that we've struggled to put teams away, like, I get it. It's fine. But, okay, so we have Mike Penix throwing in a dome to the top receiver in college football in Roma Dunze. JP's going to be back on track. J-Mac is there. Giles Jackson, who absolutely was late workhorse against Oregon the last time. Jeremy Bernard, Westy. I don't think he might have the best hands of any tight end of the country. Culp, look what Culp has done. Look at his freaking highlight reel. And DJ out of the backfield is incredible. DJ's been so incredibly healthy. And like this O-line, look at left to right. Troy Faitano, Nate Kalepo, Parker Brailsford, Julius Boello, Roger Rosengarten. They played the whole freaking game.
And the two best teams in the Pac-12 at sacking the quarterback, Utah and Oregon State, barely touched Penix. And the Ducks were all talk in week 7 about how good their pass rush is. And you didn't touch Penix then.
There's a reason they're Joe Moore Award finalists, this 5. And I get it. Like, they're thin after that. That's fine. But I don't think we're going to need them, because they've been playing the whole game. They're going to be fine. You look, if it comes down to it, I trust Grady Gross's leg. When McCallica has to kick, our kick coverage, remember how bad our kick coverage was a couple of years ago?
The kick coverage has
been absolutely amazing, man. Braylon Trice is playing his best football of the year right now. And then, okay, fine. You want to double him? Sweet. Look at the other side. ZTF, Sakai, like, pick your freaking poison. The linebackers? Come on, man. Do Carson Bruner a tackling machine? I wish we had 3 spots for him so that he and Alfonso and Eddie could play the whole game.
Our front 7 is playing as well as it's played in 2 years, really. I mean, they really summoned a huge performance in the Alamo Bowl last year, and down the stretch in general. But I mean, they're playing pretty well right now.
So when you get into that secondary, you've got Jabbar, lockdown corner. Like, please throw, just fucking throw at him. Please throw at Jabbar. I love it. But the other side of that, like Thad, Mikel Esteem, Elijah Jackson, they got to play their best game all year.
That's right? The weak point. Yeah.
It could be. They got to play their best game. They look good last week. They've looked good throughout the year off and on, but like, we need to see it. Dom and Meech.
We've just been struggling at safety. I feel like maybe since Taylor Rapp sat out the Rose Bowl. I mean, that's the last time I felt like we had a good safety back there.
You know, the first couple weeks, I hate to say it because, you know, opponents, though, look, Boise State's playing in the Mountain West Championship the day after we are in the same city. The Boise State and Michigan State games, like how Asa looked. And I heard Asa's practicing in pads. you know, so who freaking knows? But like Dom and Mish have so much experience back there. And though look, if they can rise to the moment back there, if Asa can come in, look, this is one of those years where you've got guys like him, I mean, that are going to need to step up. And in the end of the day, the coaching, you need to give me anybody besides DeBoer and Grubb game planning. I'll take that all day. Give me those. I love that we're underdogs. I love it. I love we're underdogs. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, no, I think the coaching is where we have the real advantage. I mean, Lanning has definitely, won a lot of games. But I think you look at what DeBoer has done with a lot less 4-star, 5-star talent on the roster and 23-2 in two seasons. I'm going to take DeBoer over just about any coach in the country who's not Saban or Kirby Smart right now.
I will. And like in a game like this, I'll take them against those guys all day. And I'm not going to sit here and say to you, we've got a really strong opponent this week with a lot of firepower. This isn't Michigan, Iowa. This isn't, take your pick. This isn't Texas, Oklahoma State. This isn't, this isn't Florida State, Louisville. This is a great team that we're playing against who is hitting on all cylinders, who has incredible recruiting talent, 4 and 5 stars. I get it. They're going to score. But in the end of the day, when it really comes down to it and a close game, give me the dogs.
Yeah, I mean, this 9.5 is juicy. And I think this is kind of exactly what this team needs, is like they needed a reason to come out and be like, we're getting disrespected, right? I mean, they've just gone 12-0. And here they are, almost 10-point dogs in the championship game that they earned a place in, 2 weeks ago. I think they've got to be feeling the disrespect.
They do. And I freaking love it, and give it to me. Hey, so look, we're going to be there in Allegiant Stadium cheering on this Husky team. I hope our Husky listeners out there are enjoying this 12-0 season, how freaking incredible it was, and soaking up every second of it. And for those who are going to be in Vegas, we're going to be loud on third down. We're going to be there early. We're going to support this team every moment of the way. And enjoy every freaking second of it. And there's a chance there's no sleep till Sunday in Las Vegas. This is going to be nuts.
I mean, just soak it up. These moments are, you and I have earned moments like this. They're just not always like this. It's kind of like the older Duck fans, right? They understand.
They get it.
What it means to be, to be down. And here we are, have come all the way back. We have not talked about the DeBoer extension situation. And there's rumors abound that he's looking at an extension. I mean, I think if the Huskies are able to win this game and announce that Kalen Boer has been extended, I mean, we should be celebrating in the streets.
We just hang out on the street for a few days. That's it. Yeah. Take a few days off work. I like it. Dog fans, hey, we're going to be there on Friday. Soak this thing up. Cheer for this team. Support them in every way that you can. I cannot wait for Friday to get here. Go Dogs.
Nope.
Go
Dogs. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón. Bow down to Washington!